You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey! Welcome to a brand new year and to HR Bandit. If this is your first time here, an even bigger welcome from me, Ankita Podar, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, dialing in from a very cold Dublin. If this is you returning, a big hug, and I'm so glad to see you back on our first episode of the year and our best one yet. What better way to start the year than by thanking the one gone by and predicting the one ahead? On this episode, we chat about some of the biggest trends and hypes of 2022, but more importantly, what to watch out for in 2023. But Bandits, the best part of the show, as always, is our guest for the day. I have to pinch myself, but from across the screen from me is the one and only Krish Shankar. Krish is the Group Head of Human Resource Development at Infosys, one of the largest Indian multinational information technology company. In his role, he's responsible for envisioning employee experience and driving the talent and organization strategy. Krish has over 30 years of experience and has led HR functions in organizations like Bharti Airtel, Philips, Hindustan Unilever, and Unilever. He's also the author of Catalyst, Power Up Your People Ecosystem, which is a much acclaimed playbook for HR. He also blogs occasionally on LinkedIn and is passionate about exploring new ideas in HR and organizational development and sharing them. A football enthusiast, he also likes trekking and running. Now, I first interacted with Krish when he was the president of NHRDN from 2019 to 2021, and I have been a big fan since. Krish, welcome to the show. I am so glad to have you here with us today. And I have to ask, have you made any resolutions for 2023?
Oh, firstly, a pleasure to be here, Ankita. I think you've been a fabulous champion of this podcast. So thank you very much for doing all that you do for the HR community. And I'm really happy to be on this show. And come to think of it, no, I have not made any kind of new resolutions. These are like, continue what I've been doing. So there's nothing very new that I've made for the new year. I hardly make new resolutions. So.
I also have a love-hate relationship with resolutions. So I'm in your camp. I have not made a New Year resolution, but I do something. I create a list of like 24 things I want to do before 2024. So it's a mix of things. It has things like see one of the seven wonders of the world. So kind of a bucket list, but then also some goals in there where I've said publish 36 blog posts this year, which I'm doing well on. To start with, okay, so it's a strange mix, but I hope to achieve what's on it. But Krish, do you do something like that? Do you do like a personal goal planning or like a set of lists?
No, see, there are some years where you can think of something like that, you know, and therefore maybe, yeah, this year could be one of those years. So I'm thinking of one or two things to do during the rest of the year, saying these are key milestones and key couple of things that I've kind of put in my plan for doing this year.
Awesome. Okay, so what we are going to do today, and maybe one of your plans was to get all your 2023 predictions correct, I'm going to move into our first segment of the show. Now, a lot has happened in 2022, so much so that we dedicated an entire episode discussing it. Which was released in December. So if you haven't heard that one, finish listening to this and then hop over and take a look at that. But Krish, I'm going to jump straight into my first question for you. What do you think was the biggest hype in 2022 that does not need to make its way into 23?
Well, I think, you know, media sometimes gives these kind of taglines, right? And one of the taglines they gave, which was a great resignation, yeah? And I think we've had lots of it. I hope it doesn't make it back for a couple of years now, not only 2023, but for a couple of years. I think the great resignation was like, an initial fad post-pandemic, but it kind of, you know, went into something larger and the meanings became very different. But I hope we don't see anything like that in 2023 or 2024.
Yeah, now is the season of the great layoff. Like, it is just, I think the past 2 years we've seen so many catchphrases with the word great in it. Like, now I'm just like, do we just add great in front of everything? But you're right. Like, I don't see great resignation happening in 23 either ways, because I think there'll be companies doing enough. But yeah, I hope not to see it.
You know, I think the point is what it tells, especially in the tech world, if you're kind of following it, it's a bit of a quick yo-yo, right? We had a huge peak right after the pandemic, right through 2022. And then slowly that kind of is going down. Yeah. And I think it's just a matter of, because of all this recession and all of this, but tech is quite resilient, because while there is one group which is growing, which is all the new products and new services, but when recession comes, there is the other group that's growing, which is all this cost reduction, outsourcing. So there'll be new tech that'll grow. So it's not that you're going to see another kind of a thing, but it's a very different kind of a peak you may see during the year.
Yes. Like, I do think it will be a very interesting year in just seeing how the tech industry is functioning. But I also have to say, because you picked a catchphrase, now I am a big fan of, you know, putting a phrase on something, having it catch fire and spark a revolution. So I love it. Like, if you've been on the podcast for long enough, or if you've been reading my blogs, I'm a big fan. Like, you give me a catchphrase and it's like my favorite thing to talk about for a while. But there is one that I'm hoping, similar to you, that does not make its way into 2023. It has to be quiet quitting at your wage, or call it what you want. We've discussed this in a pod episode last year, and I said it then, and I'll say it again. It shouldn't make its way into 2023, and I say it for two reasons. The first is, given the fall in job security, now it's a term, like, I will mention job security a few times in this episode, and it may be a thing, it may not be a thing, it might just be like a phase of a couple of months. But I think given that fall, it is dangerous for one to cruise in a job. Actually, not that. I think it's always dangerous to cruise in a job that pays the bill but evokes no interest. And the second reason I hope it doesn't make its way into 23 is because I hope organizations do a better job in inspiring people to bring their best selves at work. So I think the term stun is job, and it's got enough airtime, but it's time we moved to finding solutions versus the debate of, is it a good term or is it a bad term?
So I think, Ankita, I think let me just jump in here.
Absolutely.
I think, see, quiet quitting is a very, what I would call, as you say, it's a very catchy phrase, but a very much a journalist's phrase. Yeah, it's very much something which catches attention. But if you're an HR, what do you call, HR practitioner, or you understand whatever social science or HR, then you got to just understand what is the thing behind quiet quitting. You know, it's something that we've always had. It's not something new that's come up. It's been there always. It's the way you define it. It's, you know, and in the olden days, people used to call it as people being less engaged or not engaged. And then there are reasons for somebody being less engaged, and it could be due to various things. Yeah. So clearly it is, it's something that HR and HR practitioners have understood, and they've been working at over time. Yeah. It's just that this has just caught the fancy of the media, and we've kind of speaking about it. But I think we've got to, in all seriousness, go as HR people, go into depth and say, what does this mean? What are the signs of this? Where do I see this happening? Why do I see this happening? And then you'll come down to the whole thing. It's all about clearly things like maybe purpose, maybe, you know, engagement, maybe the manager, maybe the stretch in the roles, all of those will come in. And these have been things that every time companies have been working at. Yeah. So again, I kind of stay a little bit, because I think this is a little bit sensationalized. This has been an issue which has been there right through always. And these have been issues that we've been dealing with in HR always, I think.
Because you say that, I have to ask you a follow-up question. You're right in saying, like, these are issues we've known since forever, since probably we started work in an organized manner. But do you think there's something about it? Like we know that a set of people are disengaged. We know like purpose is important. We know a lot of people leave because of the kind of managers. Most of what we've discovered is not new. Why is it that year on year these themes continue? Are never solved?
Yeah, so I think there's always, see, every organization is a dynamic organization, you know, and an organization is made up of people, different types of people, yeah? And therefore, an organization goes through phases, they go through their own cycles of huge engagement, there are some cycles of downturn, as you said, maybe there is a cycle of layoff. So there are different things. So it's not that we are all completely mechanistic society that things will go as it is. It's not. So therefore, people are all different. So I think we've got to understand that organizations are human organizations. These things can come up. Yeah. And therefore, we've got to find systemic ways to solve them. And what are those systemic ways? I think every organization has a way to understand. Let me do what we call as an engagement study. You know, we continue to do that every quarter, where, what, what's happening, which gives you a feel of what's happening. Maybe people are new. Managers are new. People are working a lot more remotely. Yeah. And companies have been, I mean, the one thing that in a way the great resignation has created is it's put more pressure on the managers. So there are lots more new people who've joined the teams. And managers have to do a lot more work to really get the new team members also there. And therefore, this is maybe a passing challenge for managers to really engage with people. Yep. So I think there are various situations. It is, and therefore, as HR, we want to understand and say, yes, I think we've seen some of the signs. Maybe it's about, you know, strengthening something with our managers. Maybe there are some areas we got to strengthen. Maybe this remote working is leading to a lot more burnout, a lot more longer hours that people are working with. So how do you solve that? So I think we've got to tackle many of these things. Yeah. So some of these will never be solved forever. These are things that will keep coming because organizations are dynamic human organizations going through their own changes, going through their own cycles with people. Yeah. And therefore, but we've got to have as organization a systemic response to these things. And if that is there, then we'll probably take care of those.
Love that. It's also what keeps our job interesting. Otherwise, we'll run out of things to worry about. So now that we're talking about hypes and trends, Krish, let's do this. This is our prediction spot. Today, you and I are going to sit right here and predict the top three trends for 2023. And who knows, we'll come back in Jan 24 and see how many we got right, how many we got wrong. But with that, Krish, are you ready? Give me your first trend for the year.
First trend. Okay. I've got like three or four in my mind. Yeah. So I don't know which one I should start off with. But I think the first one, let me say, is this. And let me try and make it very different. We've all seen now the impact of AI. Huh? ChatGPT is something that people are seeing and how it's coming. What I would say is probably this is the year that we want to see a much more greater use of AI in how we respond to issues. You know, and this whole question of we had all these chatbots and other things working, but I think they will now see a sea change in how we really deal with. So how AI is coming into organizations, how AI is going to be, especially in HR, is something for the first time we're going to be seeing in a clear way. I think generative AI can be used in many cases, you know, in the way we assess people, the way we kind of respond to queries, the way people can access policies. So all these will see a change. And I think there's a great ripe, what I would call the ground is ripe for great HR practitioners to understand this and see how they can make the best use of it. So I'm seeing that this year is going to be one year where the use of AI in HR or AI in organization is going to see a big inflection point.
So one of my colleagues and friends, and I have to say this because that was my first introduction to ChatGPT, and she was way ahead than I was. You know, when COVID started, a lot of leaders were sending out these emails to sympathize and saying, I know it's a hard time. And she was just like struggling to write an email that was fit for a leader to send. And she was just like in there and say, write an email that we should sympathizing with COVID-19. And it came up as like the... She hardly had any edits, so she copy-pasted, and I was like, I need to do that. I need to use ChatGPT to help me phrase emails because like it cuts down my time that I spend creating and drafting things by a huge amount. So that's one use function that I've already seen. And then I was playing around with it, I think like most other people. And we said, can you write me a job description for a senior software engineer? Can you do that? What do you think is the first, like, if I was to say I'm an HR leader, I have access to ChatGPT, and I'm going to tell my team that this is one use case that you can definitely use it for. What use case would you recommend?
No, I think there are many now, Ankita, there are many. I think the first one is really, I see it being used in two. Basically, it's firstly about ensuring that responses to employees on various issues, policies, letters, emails, I think all of those will go through a big change. You know, that's something which I see. Secondly, it's also got to be a great thing in being used for tests, coding tests and assessment tests. So those are also another area, other areas that we can. But you got to customize it, think about it carefully. But these are two areas I see we can really use it.
Absolutely. I think you're spot on. It's 100%. You're going to see more of it in 2023. So I'm going to share my first one. And I'm going to have to bite my tongue on this. Now, in our predictions 2022 pod, I said trauma-informed workspaces should not be a trend in 2022. Now, I may have been right. I don't think it took off in the way it should have. But contrary to my belief a year ago, I think this needs to be a trend in 2023. Organizations need to design for a post-traumatic context. And even if trauma is too strong a word for you, scale it down by 100. And I think we've still gone through a lot. We thought 2022 was going to be a year of calm. We didn't see a war, rising energy prices, and everything that came with it. It has caused stress. It has left people exhausted. And I think it needs attention. So over to you, Krish. I'm going to quote the exact lines from the Fast Company article that I quoted in 2022. So the article said, trauma is what's plaguing the workplace, and organizations have failed to adequately address and offer support to their employees and the organization trauma that ensues in meaningful ways. A trauma-informed workplace seeks to minimize and limit the harm of trauma at an organization level. As the world continues to reel from havoc and devastation of COVID-19, now you can replace it with many other things, organizations are falling short as they implement initiatives and strategies around employee well-being, prioritizing speed over what their employees actually need. We saw companies publicly applaud themselves for giving employees a week off to deal with burnout, despite evidence and research that suggests a week off was essentially ineffective. In a 2018 American Psychology Association survey, more than two-thirds of the 1,500 respondents reported how the mental benefit of vacations disappeared within a few days of returning to office. 2020 made a lot of people look at the current workplaces and realize that they deserved something that's been long overdue, better. For remote and hybrid work to get better, organizations need to understand that trauma is not just an individual issue, it is an organization one. And the future of work is trauma-informed workspaces, and it's time to give ourselves permission to prioritize the needs of humanity of the workforce. Okay. That was a mouthful. Per usual, bandits, all links will be in the show notes below. I'll catch a breath. Meanwhile, Krish, tell us what you think.
Well, I think, I wouldn't go that far, but I would say, listen, what we have seen through the pandemic and through a lot of remote working is this increased sensitivity to mental health. Yeah. I think that's clearly there. And secondly, I think we're seeing a lot more young people who are coming to work, you know, and a lot more young people who just off college. And many of them have really and there has been some studies which have said that, you know, early use of social media have made some people less resilient. And I think that sometimes we find that there is this whole concept of resilience is something that's, you know, that needs to be taught a lot more. So I think I wouldn't say, I wouldn't go to the extent of trauma and other stuff. I would say, listen, we've got to really make our workplaces much more sensitive to mental health, much more aware about it, and give people opportunities to really express different issues there. I think that's going to be very important. I think, you know, in the past, I mean, if I remember, we joined organizations, and now I joined 30 years back, safety was very important, you know, physical safety, how many accidents you've had, etc. I think now completely most organizations, it's all about mental health, so psychological safety. So that's going to be very important. So I think we just have to ensure that we provide the right environment, train our managers, give right opportunities for people to really express themselves. And wherever they feel that there are signs that they're feeling under a bit of stress or anxiety or mental health, then what are the options that they can do? I think that's something all of us need to do more.
Do you think that we are being more reactive in the space of mental well-being? So, for example, like the basics, we have EAP, we have managers to check in and be more aware of, you know, how their employees are. We have sessions. But a lot of it is geared towards if you think there's a certain unbalance, then we address it via all of this. Like sometimes even being empathetic is reactive. And then I was reading something and it said, like, we need to move to a place where we need to proactively, constantly analyze. Are we asking our employees to do too much work? Are we supporting them well? Like, what are the triggers that could lead to the requirement of mental health support? And are we doing more in that space? Is there something remarkable you've seen any organization do that you think should be replicated?
No, I think, it's a continuum again. I don't think there is this thing. There is a continuum because at one end, creating the environment is the more proactive part. And the other end, you've got to really provide the mechanisms to take care of mental health, you know, as a reactive part. Now, if you want to just look at proactive, what are the ways? I think clearly we know what are the things that cause mental health. It is the team, first the team and the manager. That means the lack of social connection, any kind of stress with the manager and others, and long hours of work because of, you know, work pressures and long hours of work. I think these are the ones that are work-related, and there may be others which are external to work, but these are things that are work-related. So I think we know as organizations, I think what we do is we try and see what we can, you know, again, checking engagement, you know, routine team checks, check-ins are great ways to understand what's happening. Is there enough connect within the team? You know, are there the amount of social and emotional connect within the team? Is it there? So that's something we got to keep checking. And you will see signs of it through your engagement surveys regularly. But the key is to also educate your managers. Tell them, what does a great manager mean? And being a great manager has changed over time. You know, now it's a little bit being more empathetic, more listening, you know, so people are aware of it. And I think we got to keep as organization talking to managers about it because they are very key. They are the ones who are the critical link in this whole thing. So, yes, I think organizations are doing proactive things. And let me just give you a small example we do in Infosys. We have like a engagement survey, which is done like questions sent out every 15 days, and then we put it all together. And we create three indices out of it. The first one, we call it as an EVP index, which where employees give feedback about their job, careers, compensation, you know, learning, etc. Then we have something called the resilience index. And in this one, we really get, you know, feedback about them on social connection, the team, about, you know, purpose, leaders. So that's important because they are the ones that lead to resilience. And the last we check is what we call as a culture index. And this is what employees think about in culture in terms of, you know, meritocracy, inclusiveness, et cetera, et cetera. So that gives us an idea. And if you see anything going down, you say, there's something wrong. We got to keep track of it. So I think team check-ins, constant kind of training with managers and getting the mood of the team, both at the macro and the micro level, I think these are the ones that we can do proactively.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
What is the most absurd mental health intervention you've heard about in the industry so far? Is there anything that comes to mind?
It's a tough one. I can't say anything is absurd. I mean, maybe somebody's got a context, something. But, you know, I think what I can say, Ankita, is that Indian industry, and let me speak more of India, is that we have become much more, what I would call, much more aware of mental health over the last 2 years, you know, much more aware. There are much more, I mean, there are many examples, you know, in our companies, we never went into digital thing. You know, we used to have counselors coming to our offices those days pre-pandemic, 3-4 days a week, 2 days a week, and people would go and see them. Now it's digital. There is access to more people. You know, people are seeing it. So therefore, awareness and access to mental health has increased over the last 2 years in a significant way.
Perfect. Okay, Krish, enough of this one. Give us your next trend.
Well, I think it's a tough one, but I would say, I'm not sure if this is just going to be there in only 1 year. Maybe it's a trend that is there. I think there are two things that are there, which I would, and I've kind of conflicted on which one should I talk about. I think the first one is really this focus on skills. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it. Will skills be the currency of, you know, somebody's value rather than the education? Yeah, I think that's been there. And that's something we got to think about. And I think over time, what we're seeing is, as we've gone through all this great resignation, I think the premium on skills is becoming much more. People may start valuing skills much more. They may not value as much the education that you had, but are you able to do certain things? And the focus on lots more hands-on work, you know, partly supported by things like ChatGPT and other forms where you can do tests on coding, can help you really assess people's skills. Yeah. And therefore, I think, especially in the tech world, skills are going to become much more a stronger currency for us to really deal with. I think that's going to be important.
Okay, Krish, mine is very, very similar to yours. So I'm going to use it as a merging moment. So your second trend and my second trend have a huge amount of overlap. So I'll put that out in the world and then we will look at these similarities. But yes, I think the one trend that will happen is, I said, we learn to live with the fact that there is reduced job security in the world. I think, which means that the concept of a dual income will become even more important. Moonlighting was already a trend in 2022, and we'll see it happen again, most likely, but for different reasons. And like you said, there's a big focus on acquiring new skills, trying to find out means of passive income, increase awareness of financial planning. And then this would lead to people exploring opportunities where having dual means of employment is not a big conflict. Like, they won't go to an organization who says, no, you can only spend all your time with us. This is going to be your only source of income. The only other source of income you can have is, like, if you have property or other investments, but you can't hold a different employment. So I think it'll be interesting to see how organizations react to it, but also how you, like you said, do they invest in skilling their workforce for things that they don't need immediately. So for example, if an organization is in manufacturing and they say, okay, maybe I need, if my employees are interested and they want to acquire a skill in something that's completely tangential, I will still equip them to do that even if I don't see a complete congruence in the next 2 years. What do you think of that?
So let's just summarize this. I think employees will see skills as becoming critical and learning new skills as being critical. Companies will also see that, listen, we've got to now invest in lots more skills and give the opportunity for employees to learn new skills. That's got to become like a core part of our EVP, saying, listen, you're giving an opportunity for people to reskill and to reinvent themselves, you know, because that's going to be important. It'll be a career pivot that you do. You're doing something, learn something and move around and do something else. And companies will be providing you opportunities to do that. Now, whether it's but all of that for organization has to be in the broad area of where the organization works. It can't be that I'm in tech and I give them something in like hospitality, you know, may not work. But I think within the broad area of what the organization is doing, people can explore different things. And that's something that will be open for people to do. Yeah. And I think all this will lead to within the organization also a lot more internal mobility. Yeah. And I think a lot more internal mobility, even things like internal gigs a lot more. So the focus on people for their opportunities to learn a lot more will increase in a big way.
Do you think it would also lead to an increase in acceptance of failing at your job? So, for example, I'm in HR. I say I want to explore being a product manager, right? And they say, okay, we'll give you the trainings and the initial investment to skill yourself in that area, and then we'll also give you a 6-month stint. And it's all right if you fail in it after 6 months, you still can come back to your previous role. You still have completely neutral performance management. We won't ding you in any way. Do you think that's possible?
I think many companies still do it. Yes. They allow people, but listen, sometimes these are all, you know, in theory maybe okay, but in practical use, sometimes, you know, people have their own issues. But yeah, you're right. I think these are things that you'll see a lot more of. People taking more risks, moving jobs, learning something new, you know, moving across. People taking, I would say, more bets on their own careers in a way. Yeah, all led by new skills. So heart of it is skills as a currency, and based on which you'll find greater internal mobility, greater opportunities for people to learn more. And people taking more bets on their careers in terms of this is what I want to do differently.
Absolutely agree. I think individual risk-taking capacity will completely increase. What I'm trying to poke at is, will the organizational risk-taking capacity increase to the level where it's, again, a very psychological safe environment for us to take risks and not pay high costs to it?
Yeah.
Do you see that happening?
I think there will be. Organizations will provide the... I think, see, this is an area where organizations will think that providing the opportunities for employees to reskill, to find new roles, to create this open marketplace is something they will kind of, you know, look at it much more, because this is core to a value proposition, you know, as an employer. And they will do that. If it means taking more risks with people, probably yes. Probably because, see, in the past, you know, you've been used to people with 10, 15 years doing the same job. While you may not have a luxury of so many of those, you will have to take bets on younger people, take bets on people you're learning. So you got to really do that. And that's what I think organizations may do a lot more.
Perfect. Okay. And because we're done with our second trend, each give us your last trend that you see happening in 23.
I think this is... Well, it's a trend that's been on for some time, yeah? And this is about flexibility, yeah? I would say it's going to be, I think, and there are many, many facets to it that we'll see, yeah? We've seen this whole work from home being there. As the pandemic goes away, we have now flexibility comes truly in the sense that how are you going to make work more flexible? So it's not forced because of a COVID thing, but it's going to be core to value proposition for every organization. So we'll see lots more of it. The flexibility to work different days, you know, how as a team you get your flexibility to work as a team to come on certain days. And I think we'll see a lot more innovation around this whole hybrid work and flexibility. I think at the core of all this is greater flexibility. Different types of companies will use different methods. There's this 4-day week, which is catching a little bit of team in the little bit of power in some of those, I believe, some of those where physical presence is needed, you know, like in restaurants, hospitality, hospitals. I think the 4-day week is catching a lot more kind of momentum there. In the tech, it's about lots more flexibility. And this is going to be something that will be built in as we go along. So organizations have been ready. I think organizations are changing all their meeting rooms to be ready for hybrid meetings. Couple of people in the room, couple of people remote. And that's now, you know, most organizations have changed their hardware for those kind of things. So we'll see a lot more of that. managers are also going to be ready. So therefore, I think this hybrid flexibility thing is going to be something which will probably be much more institutionalized there.
Is there something that you've seen in the industry in the past few months around flexibility that you were like, I wish my organization was doing this, or like, I really need to go back and tell people like, we need to bring this in, or just like something that your organization is doing that is totally like, you're just like, more people need to be doing this and I don't know why we aren't yet?
I think, again, it's a good question. I don't have all the answers right now, you know, because it varies from industry. Yeah. For example, I think this whole thing about creating, you know, giving each team, saying, listen, you can decide how you want to work, is something that I've seen many companies doing, saying as long as a team, you decide how you want to work, you have all that flexibility for the work that you do. Yeah. I think the manufacturing industries are now coming together and saying, listen, how am I going to really change this whole shift thing? And they've come up with lots of, I've seen a manufacturing company here, it has come up with a great innovation of creating shifts where they give their, you know, employees a couple of opportunities to be in different shifts, but they all have to do a night shift, you know, there, but they give something saying, okay, if you do this for this, then I'm going to give you more off days. So, you know, they do that kind of a thing. You know, it's like the old people who went on to ship oil rigs, where they said, I'll spend 6 months on the oil rig and I'm getting 6 months off. I think that was there, but I think they're now taking that up in the manufacturing industry. So you get more days off. So I think those are some of the things that we are seeing as being critical now. Time off, especially in manufacturing, is also another thing. Yeah, so those are also things that people are taking off. You know, while you're working, you can take a couple of hours off as long as your team is aligned. So you see, that's another trend that will pick up also.
I'm actually trying to think, like, what have I seen in the industry that really, like, blew my mind? There's something about how we're redesigning our offices. Like, I've heard this concept of where each team, depending on how large they are given, like, think of it as a plot of land, so a piece of real estate. And they've been said, redesign it as you think is best for your team. I think we're realizing that no one space works for each team. And then just them coming together and saying, oh, maybe we're not going to be an office at all, so we can like donate that real estate to like a hobby space. Versus, I think our concept of what office spaces should look like is being very quickly challenged. And I think that's really interesting.
That's nice. Yeah, interesting.
Perfect. Okay. I'm going to give my last not a trend for the year, and then we'll start wrapping up. But metaverse is not going to be a trend. That's what I'm going to put out there. I said this in 2022. I don't think it was a year. It was a thing for HR last year. I don't think it'll be a trend for HR in 23. Meta has obviously moved to cut some of its investments in the metaverse. I think it'll be a year of us still figuring out what it is and where it'll go, but I don't think we'll really see it come into the workspace in a big way. So I'm putting it out there. I may be completely wrong. I don't know. But yeah. We've got our trends out there. Krish, before I let you go, what is the one non-work related? We've talked enough about work and workspaces, but what is the one non-work related thing that you're really looking forward to in 23?
Oh, there are lots, actually. You know, there are lots. You'll probably come to know of it in a few months. But, you know, I don't know if, you know, I kind of, I enjoyed writing a book. I did a couple of years ago, Catalyze. And I think, you know, I got great feedback. And I don't know, have you read it? If not, you should. You should read. Yeah, no, it's pretty good. There's another idea I have now, which is all about thinking about another book, maybe later in the year. It's about emotions and how day-to-day emotions, you know, we can work with. So that's something I'm going to be working on. Plus a couple of ideas, which I think will be much more clearer in the next couple of months. But yes, of course, there are the usual things that are there. I kind of, you know, have always look forward to some kind of a trek during the year, which I'll plan. So those are things which are regular. Yeah.
Amazing. So I'm going to follow you very closely on LinkedIn, try and see what these new evolving ideas are. But I love it. That looks like a whole exciting year ahead of you. But I'm just sitting here and wondering what Elon Musk is going to do with Twitter. Like, I think it's for me, it has been such, like, you could make a movie out of it, I think. So anyway, all of that, I am hoping that the stocks do really well in 2023. I'm looking for the market to pick up. I'm not going to mention crypto because I don't know what to do with that. I don't think I'll make back the money I lost in it. But I'm really, really looking for an upswing in the market. So that's my thing. Krish, before I let you go, any last words?
Well, I think, you know, Ankita, I'm saying this is for all of us in HR, you know. I think the last 3 years have been quite extraordinary for HR. Yeah, we've been pushed into, it's like, you know, I don't know if you, these science fiction novels, you put into something, you go around and you see the whole, like a time capsule, you know, and that's what we've been through. We've seen a pandemic, we've seen post-pandemic, we've seen the great resignation, we've seen quiet quitting, we've seen this, we've seen moonlighting, we've seen so many things, you know, it's been there. I think in the end, I think what is important for all of us is to say, okay, how do we get back to the basics? Yeah, I think there is the thing about there is an important thing for us, really take the fad away from the basics. Let's focus on what is it that is essential and work on it. Yeah, I think the time honored essentials continue to be that, you know.
True.
the focus on the managers and their teams, the focus on giving people real jobs. I mean, clearly we looked at many things, but, you know, if you just really want to get the best out of people, it's a function of three things: the person himself or herself, the job, and the environment. Yeah, and I think it's a mix of these three. So I think ensure that we really focus a lot more attention to ensure that people have the right jobs, and, you know, this whole concept of job crafting and something. I think those are the things we should take much more seriously to ensure that people have that opportunity there. And of course, creating that environment. So I think if you can just really get the right person in the job, ensure that the job is meaningful, where they can make an impact, where they are learning, and create the right environment, which is, you know, and that's something you got to look at different teams and say, what is it that I want to do to make this environment right? Then I think you will really make that. There's so many things happening. And we've got to keep learning. I think this podcast is great. But I think I'd also urge people to really, you know, read a lot more, see what's happening, and be connected, because I think HR is like the door to the outside, or like the, you know, you it's only through HR that the company looks at what's happening around, and therefore HR has to be always saying, okay, I am the sense through which the company is understanding what's happening around people. So let's bring that in and see that the organization benefits from that. So that's a great role that we in HR have to play. And I think we all have to be tuned to that. So I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Better words have not been said. Krish, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the pod with us. I am going to add your LinkedIn and all other details in the show notes, because we have to see what's coming up in the year ahead for you. But with that, on behalf of NHRDN, and Krish, this is Ankita, and we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.